Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to review some aspects of the Republican Party from an historical and political standpoint that don't generally get a lot of press. I am going to be doing this because this is probably the last broadcast that listeners in the various stations that carry this program will hear before Election Day in 1998. In 1998, we've been bombarded in the media with news about the White House sex scandals, real or alleged, and about semen-stained dresses, real or alleged, and we have not been hearing about substantive issues. There are other media voices that talk about issues such as economics, environmental issues, social issues, and so forth. There are some very important aspects of the Republican Party from an historical standpoint that have not received the press due them, and I'm going to be touching on some of those in this next half hour. This is not necessarily to endorse any candidate or particular issue, but simply from the standpoint of civic responsibility, I think that it is important for American voters to understand just what is at stake here. And one of the things that is at stake here is the basic issue of democracy versus fascism. Unfortunately, the Republican Party, in addition to the historical relationship between Republican presidents such as Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, probably George Bush, certainly Gerald Ford, and our political assassinations, those of the Kennedy brothers, Martin Luther King, and others, the Republican Party of the United States has an historical relationship with the forces of international fascism that dates back for decades, and it is those forces of international fascism and their connections to the Republican Party that I'm going to be focusing on in this half hour. And again, this is in order to provide people with some historical and political depth as they go to the polls and hopefully make an intelligent decision about who to vote for and just what is at stake in this particular election. We're going to begin by reviewing a very important aspect of the Republican Party, namely the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, which is quite literally a Nazi branch of the Republican Party. This element of the Republican Party, which as we looked at in an interview with John Loftus, the co-author along with Mark Ahrens of The Secret War Against the Jews, is viewed as being capable of delivering a swing vote in five key states during election years. The Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization is directed at some of the Eastern European and, to a certain extent, Italian voters that traditionally were part of the Roosevelt New Deal coalition and who had voted Democratic. In the Cold War, in the early years of the Cold War, there was an illegal domestic intelligence operation, the Crusade for Freedom, which brought many of these fascist veterans, veterans of the Hungarian Arrow Cross, the Romanian Iron Guard, the Bulgarian National Front, and others, into the United States, where many of them became leaders in not only their respective ethnic communities, but also within this very important, though little-known, branch of the Republican Party. What we're going to do now is to listen to a section of RFA 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War, and this, in turn, is excerpted from an article that appeared in Covert Action Information Bulletin, issue number 33. That was their issue of the winter of 1993. Covert Action Information Bulletin, by the way, is now known as Covert Action Quarterly. In CAIB issue number 33, there was an article by researcher Russ Belant, last name B-E-L-L-A-N-T, who's done some very fine work on this subject. And this article was entitled The Republican Party and Fascists, The Old Nazis and the New Right. And RFA 37 was recorded in the summer and early fall of 1992. And this excerpt is from the program from September 6th, 1992. We begin by taking a look at, Russ Belant's article. It is May 17th, 1985. Ronald Reagan has been back in the nation's capital less than 2 weeks after his much-criticized trip to the Bitburg Cemetery in West Germany. Now, floodlights and television cameras that are part of a president's entourage are waiting at the Shoreham Hotel as our 400 luncheon guests. Ronald Reagan had recently characterized the Nazi Waffen-SS as, quote, victims, unquote, and these comments held special meaning for some of his afternoon luncheon guests. Although it was a Republican Party affair, it was not the usual GOP set, but a special ethnic outreach unit, the National Republican Heritage Groups and Nationalities Council, RHGC. The RHGC is an umbrella for various ethnic Republican clubs and operates under the auspices of the Republican National Committee. It has a special type of outreach and appears to have consciously recruited some of its members and some of its leaders from an Eastern European emigre network which includes anti-Semites, racists, authoritarians, and fascists, including sympathizers and collaborators of Hitler's Third Reich, former Nazis, and even possible war criminals. The persons in this network are a part of the radical right faction of the ethnic communities they claim to represent. These anti-democratic and racialist components of the RHGC use anti-communist sentiments as a cover for their views while they operate as a de facto emigre fascist network within the Republican Party. Interrupting, bear in mind that one of the major strategic concepts of the Third Reich for conquest was anti-communism. They learned to use anti-communism or fear of communism as a vehicle for conquest. The last sentence again. These anti-democratic and racialist components of the RHGC use anti-communist sentiments as a cover for their views while they operate as a de facto emigre fascist network within the Republican Party. Of course, the strategic use of anti-communism and fear of communism is the major element in the strategy that the Galen Organization employed in order to exert its effect on American society. Utilizing, again, powerful domestic American political, economic, and national security elements with whose views the Galen assessments jibed, they were able to use anti-communism and the fear of communism to have the profound effects on the United States that they had. This is a realization of a major tactic of conquest by the Third Reich. Continuing. Some of the unsavory personalities who were present in that 1985 luncheon audience would later join the 1988 election campaign of President George Bush. This fascist network within the Republican Party represents a small but significant element of the coalition which brought Ronald Reagan into the White House. It is from this network that the George Bush presidential campaign assembled its ethnic outreach unit in 1988, a unit that saw 8 resignations by persons charged with anti-Semitism, racism, and even Nazi collaboration. This network organizes support for its ideological agenda through national and international coalitions of like-minded constituencies which often work with other pro-fascist groups. This broader coalition ranges from Axis allies and their apologists to friends and allies of contemporary dictatorships and authoritarian regimes. In the case of the Republican Heritage Groups Council, the nature of this network can be illustrated by briefly reviewing the backgrounds of some of the past and current leadership. First name is very important. Laszlo Pastor, Laszlo Pastor. The founding chair and a key figure in the council, Pastor began his political career in a Hungarian pro-Nazi party and served in Berlin at the end of World War II. He continues to be involved in ultra-rightist groups and fascist networks while working with the GOP. Again, begins his political career in the Hungarian Arrow Cross organization, serves in Berlin at the end of World War II, and again quoting Ballant, he continues to be involved in ultra-rightist groups and fascist networks while working with the GOP. Radislavov, R-A-D-I, capital S-L-A-V-O-F-F. The RHGC's executive director is a member of a Bulgarian fascist group and leader of the Bulgarian GOP unit of the council. He was able to get the leader of his Bulgarian nationalist group an invitation to the White House, even though the leader was being investigated for concealing alleged World War II war crimes. He is also active in other emigre fascist groups. Nicholas Nazarenko, N-I-C-O-L-A-S-N-A-Z-A-R-E-N-K-O, a former World War II officer in the German SS Cossack Division, Nazarenko heads the Cossack GOP unit of the Republican Heritage Groups Council and has declared that Jews are his, quote, ideological enemy, unquote. He is still active with pro-Nazi elements in the U.S. Florian Galdau, G-A-L-D-A-U. He is a close associate and defender of Valerian Trifa, that's V-A-L-E-R-I-A-N-T-R-I-F-A, the Romanian archbishop prosecuted for concealing his involvement in war crimes of the pro-Nazi Romanian Iron Guard. Charged by former Iron Guardists and others with being the East Coast recruiter for the Iron Guard in the U.S., Galdau heads the Romanian Republican unit of the RHGC. Philip A. Guarino, G-U-A-R-I-N-O. He is an honorary American member of the conspiratorial P2 Masonic Lodge of Italy, which plotted in the early 1970s to overthrow the Italian government in order to install a dictatorship. Guarino,
an Italian Heritage Council member and Republican National Committee advisor, offered aid to those P2 members being investigated. Recall, obviously, we've seen how Nicholas Nazarenko was a member of a World War II Waffen-SS division, Philip Guarino, part of the P2 Lodge. Now, bear in mind that the P2 Lodge, headed up by Licio Gelli, is headed up by a fellow who was an officer in the SS during World War II. And again, bear in mind that one of the major Third Reich plans for surviving defeat was to have the post-World War II Reich grouped around the SS and Gestapo. Bear in mind that, as we saw, also, we've taken a look at this in past segments of this archive show, an element of the mythology generated by Alfred Rosenberg's Ostministerium during the Third Reich was that Cossackia was a separate nation. We now find the Cossack GOP unit of the Republican Heritage Groups Council, despite the fact there is not a Cossackia in the Soviet Union. Again, this representing an evolution of a Nazi political concept into a Republican Party unit. We took a look at Valerian Trifa in a big way in Radio Free America program number 2. This fellow was invited to give the opening convocation before the U.S. Senate in 1955 by Richard Nixon. And recall that we took a look at how he came in, that is to say Valerian Trifa, an associate of Florian Galdau, how Valerian Trifa came to the United States as a result of his work for the Galen Organization. Again, Radio Free America number 2. We took a look at the P2 Lodge in Radio Free America shows 17 through 21, particularly numbers 17 and 19. Skipping down and continuing with Russ Ballant's article, the Displaced Persons Commission, which worked from 1948 to 1952, arranged for approximately 400,000 persons to come to the U.S. Initially, it sought to bar members of pro-Nazi groups, but in 1950 a dramatic reversal took place. The commission declared, quote, the Baltic Legion not to be a movement hostile to the government of the United States, unquote. The Baltic Legion was also known as the Baltic Waffen or Armed SS. Now, again, this is declared, quote, not to be a movement hostile to the government of the United States, unquote. Famous last words. Continuing, the final report of the commission noted that the decision, quote, was the subject of considerable controversy, unquote, as well it should have been. The Waffen-SS participated in the liquidation of Jews in the Baltic region because the SS units were comprised of Hitler's loyal henchmen recruited from fascist political groups long tied to the German Nazi Party. Remember the Baltics, including Lithuania, we're going to come back to them later. Anyone opposed to the German occupation of the Baltic region, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, was likely to meet a cruel death at their hands. They were now considered qualified to come to the United States to become American citizens. Further, pro-Nazi elements from other parts of Europe came to the U.S. through nominally private groups associated with the commission. In 1952, the commission completed its work. The Eisenhower-Nixon presidential campaign was on, and the Republicans were charging the Democrats with being, quote, soft on communism, unquote. Talk of, quote, liberating, unquote, Eastern Europe became part of the GOP message. That year, the Republican National Committee formed an ethnic division. Displaced fascists, hoping to be returned to power by an Eisenhower-Nixon, quote, liberation, unquote, policy, were among those who signed on. This would become the embryo for the formation of the Republican Heritage Groups Council in 1969. In a sense, however, the foundation of the Republican Heritage Groups Council lay in Hitler's networks in Eastern Europe before World War II. In many Eastern European countries, the German SS set up or funded political action organizations that helped form SS militias during the war. Last two sentences again, because they're critical. In a sense, however, the foundation of the Republican Heritage Groups Council lay in Hitler's networks in Eastern Europe before World War II. In many Eastern European countries, the German SS set up or funded political action organizations that helped form SS militias during the war. In Hungary, for example, the Arrow Cross was the Hungarian SS affiliate. In Romania, the Iron Guard. The Bulgarian Legion, the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, or OUN, the Latvian Legion, and the Belarusians, White Russians, Belarus Brigade, were all SS-linked. These organizations, again, I'm not going to read the passage, Hungarian Arrow Cross, Romanian Iron Guard, the Bulgarian Legion, the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, the Latvian Legion, and the Belarus Brigade, all SS-linked. And bear in mind that the Third Reich's plans to survive the war were grouped around the SS and Gestapo as a residual Third Reich institution.
That, again, excerpted from RFA 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War, and in turn that article was from Covert Action Information Bulletins issue number 33 from the winter of 1993, the article Russ Balance, The Republican Party and Fascists, The Old Nazis and the New Right. And RFA 37 is available from Spitfire. The historical relationship between the Republican Party and international fascism is a long one. For example, in a half-hour segment entitled A Tribute to George Seldes, that's the late George Seldes, viewed by many as the dean of American investigative reporters, I talked about an attempt by Herbert Hoover in 1931 to court-martial Major General Smedley Butler, a two-time winner of the Congressional Medal of Honor and a major general in the Marine Corps. Hoover attempted to court-martial Smedley Butler for slandering Mussolini. Later, it was Smedley Butler who foiled the 1934 coup attempt, discussed at considerable length in RFA number 10. That coup attempt was an attempt at overthrowing Franklin Roosevelt by many of the captains of American finance and industry, those grouped around the Morgan Group. And it was foiled. And this was an actual fascist coup attempt in the United States, and it was foiled by Smedley Butler. The link between Italian fascism and the Republican Party is something that has carried forward right into the present day. In the spring of 1998, I recorded a program, a pair of half-hour segments entitled Global Fascism, in which I accessed information from the Searchlight's issue of April of 1998. The Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American Spotlight, a very similar name, but a diametrically opposed ideological viewpoint. In the Searchlight's issue of April of 1998, there was an article about some attendees at the National Congress of the Italian Fascist Party, the Alleanza Nazionale, or National Alliance. That party had its National Congress in Verona, Italy, in February of 1998, and as you will hear, among those in attendance were Representative Bob Young, a member of the Republican House side of the House of Representatives, there unofficially representing the Republican Party, and also a fellow named Udi Cohen representing the Likud Party of Israel. We're going to listen now to an excerpt of that particular broadcast, and again, this is from a pair of half-hour segments entitled Global Fascism, and that in turn is available from Spitfire. This particular article is entitled Likud Greets Feeney's Fascist Congress, and it concerns, among other things, U.S. Republican Representative Bob Young and Udi Cohen representing their respective parties at this fascist Congress. The article reads in part, "It was the, quote, new, unquote, face of Italian fascism which dominated the official proceedings of the fascist Alleanza Nazionale's three-day assembly in Verona in February. More than 2,000 AN members and supporters attended, many personally invited and representing a cross-section of Italian business and industry. Gianfranco Fini, leader of the AN, was reportedly pleased with the results. Well to the fore in shaping both presentation and content was Domenico Fisichella, F-I-S-I-C-H-E-L-L-A, one of Fini's key strategists. His role in the AN has become increasingly prominent as his leader tries to replace the AN's black shirt image with a more respectable white-shirted one. Since the purge that took place at the AN's inaugural Congress at Fiuggi in January of 1995, Fini has more than doubled the electoral support commanded by his party's successor, the openly fascist MSI. He's been able to mobilize up to 100,000 supporters onto the streets and is well on his way to establishing himself as the leader of the Italian right. Fisichella, a former Christian Democrat, has laid the basis for the AN's political respray by wrapping traditional fascism in terms such as the crisis of the Italian birth rate, unquote, the decline of patriotic values, unquote, decaying multi-ethnicity, unquote, and the crumbling Tower of Babel of pluriculture, unquote. And again, note the similarity between the rhetoric of the Italian Fascist Party and the Republican Party in the far right in the United States. Continuing. Of that rhetoric, the article comments, these concepts are echoed by Fini himself. He constantly refers to the dangers of one-worldism, unquote, by which he is referring to the supposed onslaught of immigration, unquote, from the Third World to Europe. Basing his arguments on the rising number of elderly people in Europe, coupled with falling birth rates among Europeans,
Feeney appeals to fears that white, Catholic cultural values will be replaced by the alien values of a rising, non-white, immigrant population. The old racist propaganda, well packaged in bogus socio-cultural and economic jargon. It is armed with such ideas that Feeney wants to install the AN as Italy's biggest single political party. For his project to reach success, however, Feeney must fill two objectives. Having defeated and restrained internal opposition within the AN, he must neutralize his rivals on the fragmented Italian right, and he must win new allies abroad. The second aim shows sign of a breakthrough. Present in Verona were the U.S. Republican Congressman Bob Young, who compared Feeney's wisdom with that of former U.S. President Ronald Reagan, and Udi Cohen from the right-wing Likud party in Israel, who brought greetings from his party.
That excerpt again from a pair of half-hour segments available from Spitfire entitled Global Fascism. That article, in turn, came from the April 1998 issue of The Searchlight, the British anti-fascist publication. The relationship between the modern Republican Party and international fascism in many ways reached its peak, or its present cruising level, perhaps one could say, with the administration of Ronald Reagan, an individual who not only helped to frustrate Jim Garrison's investigation into the assassination of President Kennedy by refusing to extradite Edgar Eugene Bradley to New Orleans. Reagan later served on the Rockefeller Commission, which exonerated the CIA of any wrongdoing in connection with Kennedy's assassination. I do not believe the CIA as an institution performed the assassination, but there were elements of the CIA involved that were operating at the call of a different band leader, so to speak. Reagan's cabinet appointments were made from lists of personnel, and by the way, this is discussed in RFA program number 3 about the Reinhard Galen organization. It's also reprised in RFA number 30, both of those programs available from Spitfire. As I began to say, the lists from which Ronald Reagan made all of his cabinet appointments were drawn up by a woman named Helena von Dahm, an Austrian national, and she was a woman who had a relationship of indetermined nature with a fellow named Otto von Bolschwing. Otto von Bolschwing was an SS officer who was Eichmann's superior with regard to the administration of the liquidation of European Jewry. He later became head of an organization that was a parallel organization to the Reinhard Galen Nazi spy outfit that jumped to Western intelligence at the end of World War II. Helena von Dahm was quite close to Otto von Bolschwing. She maintains that she only knew him socially and had translated some documents for him and also held some stock in a company that he had headed up at one point in the Silicon Valley. Others, however, who have investigated the relationship between von Dahm and Otto von Bolschwing have maintained that, in fact, they were very, very close, and Helena von Dahm was, in effect, von Bolschwing's protege. Later, Helena von Dahm became the special White House assistant for presidential personnel and again drew up the lists from which Ronald Reagan made all of his major cabinet appointments. I would note that occasionally some of those antecedents came to light, in particular when Pat Buchanan resigned or left the White House as communications director. He was named, or his successor was named as a fellow, well, basically a fellow named Robert Kohler was named as his successor. And Kohler was forced to resign his position when it later came out that Robert Kohler, again named to succeed Pat Buchanan as White House communications director, had been a member of a Nazi youth group in Nazi Germany as a boy. That's rather odd that that would disqualify him as White House communications director. Pat Buchanan's participation in the Hitler Youth did not disqualify him. That last, of course, is an attempt at humor. The discussion of the relationship between Helena von Dahm and Otto von Bolschwing, according to one reporter who investigated this story, they were extremely close, von Dahm being von Bolschwing's protege. That is anything but funny. Another thing to bear in mind is an altogether speculative element that I have discussed, and that is the possibility that Newt Gingrich, the leader of the Republican Party at this point in time, may in fact be the Jonas Utrum character that is discussed in the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk. The book Serpent's Walk, an obscure but I believe vitally important Nazi tract, is put out by National Vanguard Books. That is the publishing arm of the National Alliance, the most virulent and arguably the most important domestic American Nazi group. Serpent's Walk is about the SS going underground, which in point of fact they did, putting together an enormous flight capital organization which became a major player in international industry and finance. That, of course, veteran listeners will recognize as the deadly Bormann flight capital organization that I've spoken about. And in the book Serpent's Walk, the SS infiltrate the United States Army, and after a biological warfare attack with genetically engineered viruses of ostensibly Russian origin, which kills the president and vice president of the United States, the Speaker of the House, a fellow named Jonas Utrum, becomes president of the United States. He is, in fact, a protege of this SS emigre organization, which has infiltrated the United States. And Jonas Utrum becomes president of the United States, declares martial law, and invites the Nazis into a ruling coalition, and they then take over the United States. As I've said before, I believe the book Serpent's Walk is anything but the work of fiction it purports to be. I believe it is a blueprint for what is going on today. Veteran listeners to this program will also recall the vitally important broadcasts by Professor Wilhelm Stauffer of Stauffer Consultants. Stauffer Consultants, and that, by the way, is a pseudonym, is a consulting service that advises governments and corporations, and they have an explicitly anti-fascist perspective. And Professor Stauffer disclosed to me that for a long time it had been the policy of what I call the Underground Reich to recruit from among American service personnel and their dependents stationed in Germany, and they thereby recruited a huge fifth column within the United States Armed Forces. I learned this before I read the book Serpent's Walk, and it was Professor Stauffer's contention that, in fact, just such a fifth column existed within the U.S. Armed Forces and also people who were dependents of U.S. service personnel stationed in Germany. In the book The Man Who Knew Too Much by Dick Russell, it's revealed that just such a program was proposed and to a certain extent actualized by General Charles Willoughby, the German-born fascist who was General MacArthur's G2 for many, many years. He was in charge of military intelligence for Douglas MacArthur. And again, in Dick Russell's The Man Who Knew Too Much, just such a program of co-option was proposed by General Willoughby and apparently to a certain extent put into practice. It was at this point in time when Newt Gingrich was in Germany as because his father was in the military and was stationed in Germany. I would note that Newt Gingrich has as his political paradigm the operational paradigm of the Wehrmacht. He's written a novel in which about a German victory in World War II. He also had as a key staffer for a period of time a woman who had been a Reagan administration staffer who had declined to authorize a study of the Holocaust for high school students because that study did not present the Nazi viewpoint. Later, when a controversy arose concerning this woman's appointment, she left Newt Gingrich's employ. I have asked the question in a half-hour discussion called A Review and Analysis of Serpent's Walk whether or not Newt Gingrich is, in fact, the Jonas Utrum character portrayed in Serpent's Walk, again, about a Nazi takeover of the United States. I am of the opinion that, in point of fact, Newt Gingrich is the Jonas Utrum character. Again, I want to stress that is speculative. Whether or not I'm correct about Jonas Utrum, there certainly are some very profound connections between international fascism and the Republican Party, and as listeners go to the polls in 1998, they should keep that in mind. That concludes this half-hour segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.